Welcome to episode 120 of Practical Defense, Martial Arts versus Firearms. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addix. We have a great show for you today, and it's particularly long, so I'll keep the introduction brief. Paul Wilson of the Karate Cafe podcast joins us for a discussion of martial arts and firearms. We discuss how each can be applied to self-defense situations and how each of the communities sees each other. I also want to call out a special thank you to Joe SXM for his generous donation to the show. Now, if you want to help the show out, there are a couple of different ways. First, please vote for us on iTunes and in the Zune Marketplace. That really helps our placement. Also, you can use the link to Amazon.com that you can find on the homepage, which is alexhaddix.com. Now, this will cost you nothing, but if you start your Amazon.com purchases with this link on our homepage, we earn a small percentage of everything that you buy. So a lot of people are already doing this, and I really appreciate it. All you have to do is click on the button to Amazon.com on our homepage, and then the first thing you do is bookmark that link. And then in the future, all you do is start that link from your bookmarks, and all the purchases will help the show. Of course, you can also use the PayPal donation button on the podcast page, like Joe did. And thanks again, Joe. Okay, so the final note before we jump into the discussion is the May issue of Taekwondo Times magazine is out. This is the first issue that carries my column, Raising Awareness, in the print edition. Be certain to check it out, and if you can't find it in your local shop, you can always get it online from taekwondotimes.com. Alrighty, on to the discussion. And welcome back. And with us this week, we have Paul Wilson of Karate Cafe. Thanks for coming, Paul.
Thanks for having me on, Alex. Glad to be back.
Now, the topic I'd like to discuss with you this week is martial arts and guns. In my experience, there seems to be a lot of distrust or lack of interest or even hatred of guns in the martial arts world. Actually, let's start with what you are a martial artist. So let's go over your background. So can you tell me a little about yourself and your martial arts experience?
I'm what we call a traditional martial artist. I've been studying it since 1988, so that's 20 plus years. It's studied Shonryu, it's Okinawan Karate. I've trained in Wing Chun, a little Jiu-Jitsu, some Eskrima, Tai Chi, the deadly art of Tai Chi. And I've been lucky enough to travel around a lot, so I've trained with a lot of different people in a lot of different places. I was also in the military, so I had to train with weapons there.
And you're also the host of the Karate Cafe podcast.
I am indeed. Which you have been so kind to grace us with your presence on a couple of our episodes as well. And that is a podcast that's primarily about traditional martial arts and the culture and the training.
Cool. Well, glad to have you on again here.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
So what I'd like to talk about is guns and the martial arts. And this is an interesting topic because I see myself as a crossover. I have, you know, almost two decades now of traditional martial arts experience, but I also grew up with guns. My father was a Marine, and he was my first firearms instructor. I received my first gun when I was four. I think it was a 20-gauge single-shot shotgun. And so I've got this cross-culture, and I seem to be fairly unique in it. And seeing both sides, there's a huge difference in the culture. And what I mean by that is that martial artists really seem to dislike guns, whereas on the gun side, the people that are into self-defense and into guns, for the most part, are very accepting of people who also train in martial artists or train in martial arts. So it seems like one side doesn't like the other, but the other seems to respect and accept the other. And that's what I'd like to discuss with you.
Okay.
So what is your, in your martial arts area, are guns ever mentioned?
In my school, yes. As we were talking about before the show, you know, I live in Texas. So,
can't avoid them there.
Exactly. And also, growing up like you, I mean, I grew up in Arkansas, and I used to go hunting. My uncle used to take me shooting all the time. We used to shoot black powder rifles competitively, but then we also, you know, we went hunting. So I learned how to shoot a pistol, a shotgun, a rifle. So I grew up doing that too, well before I started training in the martial arts. So I'm kind of like, kind of along the same lines as you, is I can kind of see both sides. I know in a lot of schools, traditional and otherwise, yeah, guns aren't necessarily, yeah, a large part of the curriculum. And in a large part, I kind of think it's because, yeah, they're a hand-to-hand school. So it's you know, we've all heard the famous saying, you know, God made men, Sam Colt made them equal.
Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorite quotes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's as a someone who, you know, probably for more commercial schools that are making their living teaching someone to defend themselves with their hands, teaching someone, you know, with a gun or how to defend themselves with a gun or using a gun for defense, kind of to a large degree negates everything that they're basing their essential livelihood on, I think.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, one I hadn't thought of. But I also see it as, two. That's a very good point, is that people don't train outside their comfort zone. And now, if they've only been taught empty-handed techniques, then they're only going to teach empty-handed techniques. And anything that's outside of their realm is not good or bad. And it's not because it's not necessarily good or bad. It's just that they don't know enough about it to teach it. And so they discourage it. The other thing that I've seen is that there's a lot of ego involved in that I don't need to have a gun. I can use my hands. My hands are registered deadly weapons.
And I'm sure you've probably come across this too. When we've told people, if you hear that, run, don't walk away from that school.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's silly. Yeah. You know, well, to speak on your first point, we both know of a martial artist out there that posed the question, you know, should guns be taught at black belt level and whatnot like that. I think probably counter or an argument against that first point is, you know, if you want to learn how to shoot a gun, go to an NRA, you know, certified gun instructor, of which I know of one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And if you happen to be in the LA area, I can point them out to you. You know, like my students, like no one, I've told my students many times and anyone I've trained with, and I think we've talked about it on both your podcast and my podcast, is, you know, you got to understand how a gun works. I mean, so, you know, you need to know, you know, which is the deadly end and which is the less deadly end, and, you know, how it works mechanically and all that other stuff. At a minimum, you just need to have to understand it. One of the things I say when I'm training with weapons in Kobudo and traditional weaponry is you train with weapons so you can understand how they work. Not necessarily, you know, so you can be a walking death machine, but so you can understand this is how that works, so you can counter it. And I think that martial artists who discount the fact that a gun may be pulled on them at some point, or they may have to defend themselves against a gun, what have you, and discounting and going like, we don't need to do that because, you know, we'll be lightning fast, and is you can't count on that. So you have to understand how the gun works.
Let's go to that point of be lightning fast. I mean, there's so many myths around martial arts that if you train and if you're a black belt, that makes you faster than a snake, and that you're going to be able to kick the gun out of some guy's hand if he points it at you. You know, there's nothing more stupid I've ever heard of than thinking you're going to be fast enough to pick your leg up off the floor, whip it around, kick the gun out of the guy's hand before he has to move his index finger half a centimeter.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just beyond the realm of possibility. Well, I guess it's within the realm of possibility, but incredibly improbable. You know?
No, I have seen an interview with a grandmaster. I think he was Okinawan grandmaster, and he said he actually did that once. But he realized after the adrenaline wore off that he had a hole in his foot.
Yeah, I remember seeing that too, yeah.
That was many, many years ago. I can't remember who it was. But he said, yeah, I actually did kick the gun out of the guy's hand. And then when I started limping, because I found I'd been shot.
Yeah, anyone who's going around exposing that. Now, like for me, in my school, when I'm teaching weapons defense and we get on the subject of guns and stuff like that, I talk about simple things, you know, like, okay, now here's the gun and there's the hammer and, you know, here's his finger and, you know, but I can't, I'm not going to tell him that, you know, this isn't, you know, I can't guarantee you this is going to work and I can't guarantee you that, you know, you're going to have the time to react to this. And, you know, I try and put a lot of caveats in there, but you can't, you know, you can't train somebody like this is what's going to stop a gun. I've heard people, you know, use that little, you know, like Jackie Chan disassembling the thing and they say, well, I understand how a gun works. So if they grab it, I can just click, click, and I'll disassemble it. And I'm like, well,
that is such a myth that was around the Beretta 92FS. And
right,
that you could pull the slide back and pop the pin out and pull the slide forward and disassemble the gun in like three moves. I own a 92, and mm-hmm. it is one of my favorite handguns. It is just, I mean, you put anything in there and you pull the trigger, it will go off. It's not that easy. But they talk about people, oh yeah, well, people train in prison with this. Okay, how do people in prison get guns to train with this?
Exactly. They built a detailed wooden replica.
Or maybe out of soap.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, and so I think there's probably, and kind of getting back to the original, the theme is, I think there's probably more scenarios to train against a gun than is practicable, I guess, by most schools. I think that's probably one of the things, you know, because, and again, like I say, like if one of my students came to me and said, like, well, I want to learn how to defend against a gun, I was like, well, I can show you some things to defend against a gun. But if you really want to learn about a gun, go to a gun instructor. Yeah, when you emailed me about this topic, I kind of started thinking about it. And you know, we've talked in the past before about, you know, guns kind of becoming a traditional martial art or things that are, you know, relatively current in the self-defense realm kind of being a traditional art now. And back in Okinawa, you know, you would train with a karate instructor. And then they say, well, okay, you want to learn Kabuto, you go learn weapons from this guy. And the karate guys didn't know. Well, they may have known it, but they didn't teach it. They said, you go learn with this guy. And if you want to learn, you know, maybe this particular weapon really well, then you go over to this other guy. You know,
so they separated the empty-handed techniques from the weapon techniques. Now, for the people that don't know the translation, Kabuto is the Okinawan style of traditional weapons.
Right.
Or like a boat oar, staff, kama, sai, nunchucks, things like that. Those are considered Kabuto, and there's a weapon style called Kabuto that's separate from karate, which means empty hand.
It is, yeah. And can I plug? I've coined a new phrase.
Sure.
TMMA, which is traditional mixed martial arts, because like in my school we teach karate, kabuto, and tuate, which is like grappling the joint locks. But they're really kind of separate. But you're kind of mixing them together. Like, you know, you somebody will go and study Muay Thai, and they'll go study jiu-jitsu, and they'll go study, you know, boxing, and they bring them all together. And that's a mixed martial art. And so I got to think, I was like, well, that's kind of the same, because in the, you know, decades past or centuries past, they would, you know, you want to learn this, you go over there. You know, you want to learn sumo, you went to a sumo instructor. You want to learn, you know, how to shoot a bow and arrow, you went to the kudo instructor. You didn't, you know, it wasn't one-stop shopping. But then again, people also trained probably much harder than we do and for a lot longer than we do. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why we kind of have an amalgam more today than they did back then. So like in this case, you know, if someone wanted to train with a gun, you know, I think now, because people are thinking like, well, I don't want to lose that student and the income, they're going like, oh, no, you don't need to worry about training with guns. You know, you need to just stay here and I'll show you the defenses against a gun and no one can touch you, because that's preserving their income.
Yeah, but that is the key point, is that it's a complete disservice to the student. And as I've talked about many, many times, you're given this false sense of security when it comes to guns or anything else that you do, and you think that teaching a sport art is actually going to protect you on the street, or training for tournaments is going to allow you to take on a thug. Now, one of the things I say, and a lot of somewhat controversial, is I say that the average street thug will wipe the floor with the average tournament champion.
Because and you're probably right.
Because a street thug is vicious. They practice for the real world. They don't care about the fancy stuff. There's no touch sparring. There are no points. The point is to stay standing up. I mean, Grandmaster Parker used to have a saying, it's not who's right, it's who's left.
Right. Yeah, correct. Yeah, I mean, they're not there. They're not concerned with your safety. They're not concerned with, preserving your well-being, you know, which is actually on the side of, you can say arguably the whole idea behind martial arts is to protect yourself and others while jacking somebody up. But, you know, I mean, most schools and most schools of self-defense are thinking about, you know, defending themselves, but I mean, not necessarily putting the total hurt on whoever it is that is attacking you. Conversely, the person attacking you really just wants to jack you up so he can take your money or whatever. You're not a concern for him.
Right. Yeah. In fact, with a good sociopath, there's, I want to say, zero concern. It's almost a negative. Sometimes they even get pleasure out of it.
Right, exactly.
But as the average honest citizen, I mean, our point is to make the attacker stop. We're not there to hurt them. We're not there to kill them. We're there to make them stop attacking us. And sometimes serious injury is the only thing that will make them stop.
Exactly.
But we're getting a little off topic. Let me go back to the guns. I teach defense against handgun. I teach it in the traditional martial art, the American Kenpo, and I teach it in reality-based. And I honestly do not like our American Kenpo techniques. I teach them because they're part of the style, but I really do not like any of the weapon self. The knife technique and the techniques and the gun techniques, I think, are poor. They really do not do the job because as part of the technique, you take your hands off the person for a moment or you switch hands. And there's no way. I mean, if somebody's coming at you with a knife, you grab on with both hands and you do not let go until the person is stopped.
Absolutely.
You don't switch hands and you do a wrist twist and you pop the knife out and stab. No. Nah, it doesn't work. No. And the gun techniques are very similar. But I do teach them because there are going to be cases when you have nothing left to lose.
Right.
The person you feel deep down, this guy, no matter what you do, if you comply, if you give the guy your money, you give him all your rings, you give him whatever he wants and you're complying, he is still going to kill you. That is the time that you do the defense against guns and nothing before then. If the guy's got a gun on you, comply. But if you think he's going to pull the trigger anyway, that's when you react. And mm-hmm. There is no guarantee it's going to work.
Right.
You will probably get shot. You will almost definitely get stabbed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You go up against a knife, you're going to get cut. Well, you know, I was just thinking about one of the things you said about the false sense of security from a traditional martial arts standpoint or from a martial artist standpoint of being able to defend against a gun. You know, the obverse could be said about someone carrying a gun, because I know... Yeah, a lot of people in my life that have carried guns daily. You know, my uncle carried a gun with him all the time. But most of those people who I knew didn't train with them. They didn't train to use them. They didn't, you know, take regular practice. They didn't train to draw. You know, they didn't. And which is, you know, kind of the thing we were talking about a long time ago was, you know, sword has aikido and, you know, kendo and kenjutsu and all that stuff. You could look at a gun the same way. You know, learning how to use a gun is an art. And, you know, learning how to draw it, learning how to fire it, learning how to aim it, you know, learning how to clean it, the whole thing, it's an art.
Well, not just an art. I mean, if you are a concealed carry permit holder, there is an incredible responsibility that goes along with that. And must train, because if you're going to carry, there's so much that can go wrong. You need to constantly think about that. You need to constantly drill with it, because it's like if you carry a knife for self-defense and you don't train with that, you're going to hurt yourself more than you're going to hurt the other person. I'm not saying they're going to take it away from you and stab you with it. I think that's kind of a myth, but the fact that you draw with it, the fact that you're going to swing wildly, you're probably going to cut your own arm up more than you could cut the other person.
You know, it's funny you say that, because my plumber was supposed to come by last week and do some work in the house, and he didn't show up. And so I texted him and I was like, hey, you're going to come by? And he called me like a week later and he's like, sorry, man, I've been meaning to get back to you. I was in the hospital all week. And I was like, what happened? And he said, I was getting out of my car and his gun either fell out of his pocket or, you know, he had it by the thing. Anyway, the gun fell out of the car and discharged and shot himself through the ankle.
Ow.
You know, and so I'm fairly certain he doesn't, you know, go target shoot and train on drawing. And, you know, obviously weapons retention isn't a big factor. But, you know, but that's just one of the things that, you don't think about, you know, that I just got my gun and it's there under my seat and blah, 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 blah. You know, can you get it out quick enough? Is it loose when you get out of the car that you're going to brush it and it's going to fall and shoot? You know, is the safety on? You know, is round chambered? All that stuff is, you know, that I think, I guess, maybe get back on that it's a false sense of security that because I have a gun, I will be able to defend myself and whatnot. Because there's stuff that can go wrong. If you don't train with that too, you're looking for trouble. I know I'm preaching to the choir with you, but I'm just saying. But, you know, so I guess I think that going back to the original point of the topic was I think there's a lot of that, you know, I teach karate. I teach hand-to-hand techniques and self-defense concepts and a traditional art and blah, blah, blah. But that's just not in my curriculum. And it's not because I'm worried that they're going to go and spend money elsewhere because God knows I don't make any money doing this anyway. But I think that's probably one of the things that holds people back from, you know, going like, yeah, go train with guns. And then also because maybe no one has the time to really devote that into their curriculum, you know. And then, you know, there's the whole, you know, just like you know about, there's the whole insurance aspect and,
oh, yeah.
And you know, safety precautions and blah, 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 that probably a lot of schools wouldn't want to take on in order to train somebody with weapons. I mean, you were setting up your training program and you were telling me all the stuff that you had to go through. Well, I mean, imagine that writ large on however many schools there are. But I do agree that there is probably a lot of ego that's involved. Well, I don't need a gun because I'm a walking death machine. You know, I can see that as being a factor. You know, it's, absolutely.
Well, let's go back to the point when you're talking about when you teach and you were teaching defense against guns and you actually go over the different parts of the weapon. What props do you use?
I've actually got Daisy, and that's kind of dating myself. Back in the 80s, Daisy made a bunch of pellet guns that were life-size replicas, and it had a clip, it had a safety. Like I had mine as a, I think it's Browning High Power. The slide goes back, you pull the trigger, slide goes back. It has, you know, the magazine comes out. And it actually shoots a soft plastic pellet that you could shoot somebody with if you wanted to. It was before semi-munition and all that other stuff. And I also have one that's a revolver, like a 357. And so one of the things that I talk about is like, okay, well, you know, there's the hammer, and if you can jam the hammer like on the revolver, you know, that could prevent it firing. You know, there's space behind the trigger that maybe you can get in. I talk about those kind of things, but what I try and get them to do is like, you know, when you pull the trigger and the revolver goes off, then, you know, the cylinder will roll if it's double action, you know. When someone fires an automatic, the slide's going to come back. You know, some automatics don't have hammers. Some do. You know, there's stuff like that I talk about that, you know, it's... And again, you know, I can't really get in depth because I can't say, you know, like every gun operates this way. And I don't have enough examples of anything. I just kind of talk about the basics of, you know, this is how a gun works, and this is how an automatic works, this is how a revolver works, this is, you know, where the button is to make the clip come out, this is where, you know, the actuator is to make the slide go back, that kind of thing is usually what I kind of cover.
Okay. In all the traditional martial arts that I've trained in that has any sort of gun defense, they're always just the rubber ones. And they never talk about the different aspects of the gun. They just make sure, you know, hey, try and not cover yourself with a muzzle and things like that.
Yeah. I think it's because they just don't want to get bogged down in the minutiae of it. And
or they don't know. See, that's the thing.
They don't know.
And
yeah.
They can't speak to it. And that's, I think, a real issue when you're talking about self-defense versus just straight martial arts. And that's why, again, I don't need it. I'm a martial artist.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, maybe they don't want to say something that sounds stupid, you know, and MSB. They are doing a disservice to both themselves and their students by not at least doing some research, doing just even a cursory amount of research. Like if you're, you know, and just basically, you know, go to like howstuffworks.com and read up on guns.
Yeah, I was just thinking we should move on from the strictly martial arts side to maybe talking about some of the police, because let me take a step back. The most comprehensive and realistic defense against handguns that I've seen has been come from Jim Wagner and the reality-based system. And one of the reasons for that is not only do we use the rubber guns, but we actually use airsoft guns. And we put the safety equipment on and everything else, and we actually try to disarm using an airsoft gun. So the guy putting the gun to you and holding the gun to you, you get immediate positive feedback, whether or not it goes off and whether or not you get hit, because you get a welt if you miss. And you miss more than 50% of the time. So when you're trying to go for a gun disarm, it really has got to be there's no other choice. It's like, I'm going to die anyway. I got to do something, because it doesn't take much. It doesn't take much for that to pull the trigger.
Yeah. Well, you know, and so I guess probably from a logistics standpoint, that equipment can't be cheap, you know, so.
Well, you know, you can get an airsoft gun, a spring-loaded airsoft gun for $20.
Yeah, okay.
And, well, and when you do train, you do want to use, if you're going to shoot somebody with it, and you, like, I'm talking goggles, I'm talking padding, I'm talking, you know, all the safety gear, all the precautions, everything else, $20. And you need to get the spring loaded, because you want to have it around 200 feet per second. Because if you go over 200 feet per second, you really start to hurt quite a bit. For my training, I actually have, because you went back to, you were talking about the Daisy gun that actually reciprocates and everything else. I purchased a very expensive exact replica of my defensive handgun, and it fully reciprocates. It's got the green gas. So you put the magazine in and you pull the trigger, and it fully reciprocates and has a complete feel, looks identical, fits in my holster, the whole thing, and it was $130. But it is beautiful and works and looks and feels, has the same weight exactly as my defensive handgun.
Make sure you don't put it next to your headboard and grab the wrong one.
Well, in California, the tip has to be painted neon orange.
Ah, okay.
So that's a California thing. It's not true in all states, but California, it has to be done that way. And it's a serious crime if you take that off.
Well, there you have it.
But that's what I use to practice with. I can do that in my backyard. I actually have one of those bobs, and I have him dressed up, and I put, you know, paper on his chest and his head, and I practice moving and shooting in my backyard with the airsoft gun. I don't have to go to the range. I can do it in my own backyard.
No. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And see, and so that's where I'm thinking that, like, probably from the martial arts standpoint, you know, that's probably where a lot of instructors are going. Like, if they want to do that, they can. And I admit, I'm kind of in the same realm. I mean, if someone really wants to train with a gun, they need to do it outside my school, because I can't teach them. I mean, I'm not an instructor of handguns. I can give them, you know, a vague idea, but I mean, because I know how to shoot a weapon, I know, you know, how to handle it and all that stuff like that, but I'm not qualified to teach them, and I know that. That's the thing, and I'm okay with that, and I'm not going to sell them short. I'm not going to, you know, you don't have to worry about it. You know,
But at least you have enough information that you realize that, and you go through and you actually tell them, hey, okay, this is where my knowledge ends. Go seek, you know, an actual full instructor in this, because my concern and my experience is that because they don't know it, they poo-poo it and they say you don't need it, which I think is a serious problem in the martial arts world. Now, moving on to the other side, my experience with the police and my experience with the gun community is the exact opposite. The police and the people that I've trained with military and police and everything. What's funny is, we'll start with the police. And this has also been Jim Wagner's experience, is when we try to teach knife defense, they laugh and say, well, don't bring a knife to a gunfight, because they assume that they're going to have their sidearm. But after they've done the Tooler drill a few times, then they start to realize, oh, I may not always be able to get to my sidearm.
Right.
Now, I've gone over the Tooler drill before, but I'll do it one more time here. The Tooler drill is called the 21 feet or 7 meter rule. It was developed by, his name was something Tooler, and he developed this drill and found out through testing that it takes 1.5 to 2 seconds for a person to find their sidearm and draw it. And in that same amount of time, the average person can cover 21 feet of open space. So you have less than 2 seconds to recognize the threat is coming at you, decide to draw your firearm, find your firearm in its holster, if it's got the multiple retention, to release the multiple retentions, and then draw it. Often, they don't get it out of the holster. They get their hand to it before they get stabbed.
Right.
So at that point, you're sitting there, you're writing, you're looking down at your little notebook, and you're writing, and all of a sudden you look up, and this guy is running at you. And you have to decide, oh, crud, drop, reach, draw, unhold, get the whole thing going. By that time, the person's on top of you. So you don't have time to get to your sidearm. So what you have to do is you actually have to learn the empty-handed techniques to defend against a knife. But again, that's a misconception that a lot of people have, is I don't need to know empty-handed techniques because I have a gun.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Again, when you email me about this topic and talking about the culture of it, the first thing I remember was I was actually at work, and I think I'd just got my shirt on and, whatever. And anyway, I was at work, and one of the guys at work, who's actually a fairly nice guy, but could be kind of a jerk sometimes, I said something about going to class or missing class. I don't know what it was. But anyway, he was like, so you study karate, huh? Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah. And he said, well, you keep on practicing your high karate and I'll be at the range of my 38. And I was, 3 feet from him. And I said, do you have a gun right now, Jeff? And he's like, no. And I slapped him. And I said, I always have these. And I know I can reach it before you can get that gun out. And of course, he didn't have the gun. Now, granted, if he was, if he was 23 feet away, I might be in trouble. But working on the assumption that, he knows how to pull his gun. But I mean, that's kind of the counter of the argument of, and I've heard it many times before. My brother has said it. Even my uncle has said it, I've got my gun. I'm like, can you get it before I can get to you? And as a martial artist, it's like if I think you're fumbling for your gun, I'm running the other way. So, that's the kind of counter of the article even on our show, we interviewed, you may remember, Shane Franklin, the guy who was running the Marine Martial Art Program.
Yeah, the MacMac program. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And one of the things that he was talking about, I can't remember if he talked on the show or we were talking about it afterwards, but he said, we train with everything else. He says, but all things being equal, I'm going to shoot you first. He says, if I can't shoot you, things have gone horribly, horribly wrong. So that's maybe a variation on that theme. But then again, the way they train with hand to hand is pretty frappin' brutal. So, but he said, the Marine Martial Art Program is not the tip of the spear. It's, after the bayonet, so.
Yeah, I actually went before my cousin was deployed to Iraq. I actually invited him over to my house, and we spent a day going over defensive techniques. And I had him wear his full uniform and everything else based on the MacMac program, but also just using the items that he had at hand to defend against, including his rifle. Now he's also in the Navy, so he wasn't expected to do combat duty. So his training was different. So he wasn't exposed to a lot of this stuff. But if I figured,
yeah. Mostly we do a lot of napping and
now.
Hey, I was in the Navy. I don't know. We did a lot of napping and then we read comic books for a little bit. That kind of stuff.
Okay.
I kid. Well, I was a submariner, so we did, sleep as much as we could.
Oh, dude, you did nothing then. You had nothing to do. You had your 8 hours of duty and then 16 hours of bunk time.
Please.
So I was giving him training and experiences that he wasn't normally getting. He wasn't expected to be in combat, so he hadn't gone through this type of training before. But I wanted at least to expose it to him just in case, something random happens. He at least has some clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good idea. I guess coming back from the training and the culture and everything else, I think there's probably also a perceived... Now, I think, and this is from my side looking in, and you may be able to shed a little more light on that, is I think there's probably a range of, you know, gun enthusiasts, call it what you will. And I think that there's probably, you know, at one end, there's the people who's like, you know, I got a gun, you know, and they think that that's fine. And at the other end, there's someone who's like, well, I have a weapon and I train with it, you know? And so I think that there's probably, you know, like you're saying, there's the culture of, for gun people, quote unquote, is more inclusive. I've seen it both ways. I've seen, you know, people who carry guns, but usually it is the people who don't train with guns. It's the people who just, they have a gun. You know, they've always had a gun. They grew up shooting guns. They've always had a gun. And so they're the ones who are thinking like, well, I got a gun, I'm cool. And there are the people who, you know, are like you that like train with them and, you know, train to use them and, you know, if nothing else, just like them, you know, and like them in the sense of the technical term and enjoy the, you know, the art of the gun, that are probably more inclusive. But growing up, you know, being here in Texas and growing up in Arkansas and whatnot, I've seen far more people who are dismissive of martial arts more so than are inclusive. However, the people who have been more inclusive are people who are like the military and the police who do use guns and understand the value of martial arts, traditional or otherwise.
Interesting. Yeah, because my experience with a lot of police is that most of the time the police rely on their sidearm for just about everything. And there are some that I trained with in that also come to the martial arts classes, but they seem to be in the minority. And I may be, and again, this is my personal experience, and not necessarily an accurate overview of everyone. And of course, the people listening to this show are usually self-defense people and martial arts people. So I've got the listening audience it's not indicative of what the overall population is. But what I found, especially in this the arena, the self-defense arena, is that people interested in self-defense, if they're gun people first, they're very accepting of martial arts. Because they come from two fields. They come from two different sides. We have the martial artist self-defense person, and then we've got the firearms self-defense person. And I'm right in the middle because I do both.
Right.
And so I see into both worlds.
Oh, like I say, I guess maybe it's more of a blanket statement. I've seen the more military and police who have been maybe not necessarily like they're not about the martial art, you know, like, you know, learning and getting a belt and doing all the stuff like that. But they're understanding that the hand-to-hand combat part, you know, is a potential thing in their job. So they may only train for a couple of moves. We've got, I think somebody on the Karate Cafe boards, and he's a law enforcement guy. And I think you read it there that he said he only uses like maybe two holds, and now he can put them on like a master. So like if, you know, he's sparring in class and can get a hold of your arm, he can throw you in an arm lock in a heartbeat and take you down because he does it all the time.
Yeah.
And he does it almost exclusively, that and like one other move. And I've read before on a board that there's a guy who it was some judo throw, and he said he uses it all the time to take people down, and he can unleash it in a heartbeat, you know. But it's so he doesn't like, you know, like woohoo, martial arts, greatest thing ever, and you know. But he just, I guess, you know, acknowledges the fact that is a component in his toolbox that he needs, that he cannot discount just because he has a gun.
Yeah, he has a technique that he has perfected and works really well for him, and he has right. adopted that, and it's part of his toolbox.
Right. But, you know, but they're not necessarily, well, actually, I guess both these guys are martial artists, but it's not like they're really expecting the martial arts to supplant their weapon and vice versa, because they know you can't use both, you know.
Well, that's the very good point that I wanted to bring up, is that there are times when lethal force is inappropriate.
Right.
You know, one of the things that you get when you get your concealed weapon permit is you get a brief introduction, and sometimes it's people's first introduction to the use of force continuum. And this is so absolutely critical to your training that is completely absent from the martial arts, which I continue to harp on, is that it's not always appropriate to break the guy's neck, poke the guy's eye out, stomp his knee, you know. Yeah. It's not always appropriate to pull your gun and just point it at them. You know, you have, there's a scale, a response scale. And so because you're in a bar fight and you happen to have your firearm with you, it doesn't mean if the guy's throwing a punch at you that you can just pop your gun out and put it in his face. That would be an inappropriate response. That would actually probably, if you don't lose your license to carry, you might go to jail.
Yeah, absolutely.
So at that point, you need a non-lethal alternative. And drawing your knife is not a non-lethal alternative.
Right.
That's considered a lethal weapon as well.
And that's what I've discussed with a few people that I've talked to that, you know, have said, well, I got a gun. I said, yeah, and if you pull that, and they say, you know, if I pull this gun, you're not going to attack me. I said, no, but I'm calling the cops, you know? And usually it's, you know, two people talking, and it's like, well, you know, I'll do this, and you do that, and then I'll do this. And it's like, well, if you pull a gun on me, I'm not going to attack you. So, I mean, on my end of the argument, it's never like, well, we're never going to get, you know, I'm never going to fight you. You know, if you attack me, it's something different. But, you know, but I mean, if you pull a gun in some way to threaten me, then I'm going to call the cops. You know, if I understand you're not going to shoot me and there's a lot of stuff going on. But, you know, yeah, so, I mean, that's a perfect point. It's like, well, if you pull that gun, there's only two things you can do with it, put it back or pull the trigger, you know, that, you know, kind of thing. Yeah, I think that that's important. I teach that in my class. I have, I think I probably told you about it before, the 5 levels of self-defense. And the last 3 are escape, control, and defend. And by which I mean, you know, you escape the situation, you control the situation physically or otherwise. And then defend is when you have to physically defend yourself and then whatever that entails. But I always tell my students, I go like, but it's a sliding scale. And, you know, once you, you know, if you can't escape and you can't control it, you know, then you may have to defend yourself. But then as soon as you can control it, you have to go right back to control. And then as soon as you find that opportunity to escape, you escape. You know, you can't just, yeah. And one of the things that I have a problem with in some martial arts is, and I think they do it in Kenpo, is, you know, the concept of overkill. Yeah, but you can't always do that.
Yeah, you know? I'm nodding my head, which is very good for audio.
Hit the nod button. Yeah, you know, you can't, you know, depending on the situation, which is, you know, the situation that I, you know, think that most people are in, is you just can't, you know, if someone attacks you, you really don't need to always just beat somebody down and break their leg and snap their fingers. And, you know, you have to do as much as you can do to defend yourself, get control of the situation, and then, you know, disengage.
And this is one of the reasons why I think that the people who start with guns as their defensive purpose and their defensive tool rather than martial arts are so accepting of the martial arts is because they start at the most lethal and realize this doesn't work. I mean, yes, it will always work. It may not always be appropriate. And so then they start looking down the continuum to the less lethal items, whereas in the martial arts arena, you start at the less lethal and then have to work your way up to lethal. But the problem is that because there's so much bad martial arts training out there or inappropriate martial arts training, that the misconceptions and the bad training often lead you to think that you're at a different level than you actually are. And I heard there was a great quote. I was watching SWAT TV with Rob Pincus, and he called this the misinformation or bad training. He called it a training scar, and I just thought that was a great term.
A training scar.
Training scar. It's when you train inappropriately and ingrain these bad habits. It's called a training scar. I thought it was wonderful.
Oh yeah, that's I like that term. Well, you know, kind of what I was thinking, or I guess as you were talking about that, is actually, yeah, and you could probably speak to this better, being a firearms instructor, is the ingraining of, because one of the things that I do with my students is, you know, is like, okay, and you can really hurt somebody doing this, and you can really hurt somebody doing this. You know, whatever the technique is, you can really hurt somebody doing this. But you don't actually really ever hurt anybody. So, but then you'll start sparring, you'll start wrestling, you'll start doing something, and somebody will get hurt. And you can kind of go like, see, that hurt, right? Now imagine if, you know, like you hyperextended your knee, you know, or you put a wrist lock on somebody and it really, you know, hurt their wrist or got their elbow and go like, see, that really hurt. And so if you do that to somebody else, you can really hurt them. If you do it really fast, you don't have the control and you can really hurt them. And then I think, you know, how do you get that across in training with a weapon, with a gun? Because, I mean, you can tell, to me, it's almost, and you could probably explain it to me better, because it's kind of an abstract, it's like, you know, you shoot somebody, you could kill them. But there's no real way, I mean, other than, I guess, maybe with an airsoft gun, of going like, you know, this hurts. Now imagine if this was a piece of metal going in your body, you know. How do you approach that from the gun end? How do you get that across?
Well, unless we're in under very controlled, safe conditions, and I don't know if this is actually answering your question or not. You tell me at the end. We practice moving and shooting targets, but one of the things that you're taught in self-defense with firearms, there are no warning shots.
Right.
Because if you fire at anything but your target, it's negligence on your part. Because you have to know your backdrop. You have to know it's going to ricochet. So there is no warning shot in self-defense with a firearm. Now, as far as the martial arts aspect, I love using airsoft. Love it. Because you get that immediate feedback. But very few people train with airsoft guns in a self-defense manner. There are law enforcement trainings. There are these, a lot of them, firearms people are starting to use airsoft and simunition and things like that. You don't see simunition in the civilian area, but
right.
you're starting to see more and more airsoft in these indoor ranges. Like they'll take like a rent out a laser tag range and you'll go in, you'll pad up and put the gear on and you'll go in with airsoft guns.
I totally love to do that.
Oh, it's so much fun. It is so much fun. A few instructors do this and, you know, you pay the $150 for the class for the day and it is just a blast and you're coming out exhausted and it's just so much fun. But those are the times that you can actually really safely in a controlled manner shoot at a target that's trying to shoot you back or avoid you rather than shooting at paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still new. And I think Jim Wagner actually was the first person to incorporate airsoft guns into a martial arts type training scenario with a reality based.
Yeah, see, and kind of what you talked about was kind of, and I don't know if I've talked to you, because I remember we talked a little while ago about picking out a defense weapon, which was a great show. If anyone missed that one, go back and get that. But, and I think I emailed you and told you, like, because like, I don't think a gun as a weapon of self-defense. I know it can be used as it and whatnot, but because there's, you know, like you say, there's no option. You're shooting somebody. I mean, and I got my training in the Navy, so I'm shooting for center mass. I'm not going to try and wing them, you know? And so.
Well, yeah, that's true. You shoot to make them stop. You don't shoot to kill. You shoot to make them stop.
They're hard. But that's my point is, and I guess it's like, how do you impart that to the students of going like, you know, here's the gun and you will kill somebody with it.
A lot of people have a problem with that. You know, and when I teach the women's defense course, we cover handguns. We cover using them because what we call a battlefield pickup, you know, if the guy has a gun and for some reason he drops it and you get your chance to get your hands on it, we want to give them at least minimal exposure to know how to point, how to squeeze the trigger, the barriers, the stuff that you cover in your class, the basic functions, nothing sophisticated, nothing advanced. A lot of the women will not even touch the airsoft gun. And in some cases, it's the first time they've ever held anything, even a BB gun. And they say, well, I don't want to use a gun. I'll never kill somebody. And I was like, well, okay, that's your choice. Absolutely. You have a choice whether or not you ever want to use a gun in self-defense. But what if your child is being attacked? Would you pick up the gun then and use it?
Yeah, I remember you talking about it, and you talked about it on one of the shows. Yeah, you know, it's the same problem we have, you know, and I'm sure you've seen it in teaching self-defense and martial arts is, you know, women sometimes just don't want to hit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I do in self-defense seminars almost, you know, immediately right out of the gate is like, hit this bag, you know, no, really hit it, you know, and because they have a propensity not to hit.
It's bad social engineering. Bad social engineering.
Right. You know, so, but I mean, so how do you get that over to, you know, the student? Because again, you know, I mean, I guess that's part of the art of the gun is, or yeah, I guess that's part of the other, you know, it's the drawing and the firing and the aiming and drawing and the aiming and the firing, probably better. And whatnot, but it's also well, these are the repercussions of after you pull that trigger. Is, you know, how does that approached?
There's lots of counseling, lots of survivor's remorse. You know, humans are wired not to want to kill other humans. It's a mammalian thing. And the military spends millions and millions and millions of dollars every year training people to overcome that innate instinct. If you haven't read the book, you have to read the book On Combat by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. He talks about this, and it's an absolutely amazing treatise on the subject.
Hmm.
But the military has to teach people to overcome this innate restriction of not wanting to kill another human. I think one of the civilians said in Vietnam, 10% of the soldiers actually aimed at the targets.
Wow.
They just pointed and you know, sprayed and prayed because they really didn't want to hurt the other person. They'd never met them before. They didn't know anything about them, but they were trained to, they were told, shoot. So they just kind of did it.
You know, I think I read like a week or two ago in some magazine I was reading about that. That very thing. That's weird.
I bet it was whatever the article done. I bet it was based on Grossman's material. He has a definitive work. He's a professor at West Point.
Then he should know. Yeah. So, I mean, I think probably, you know, and I guess maybe from a martial arts standpoint, that's maybe an issue, you know, I guess probably with somebody who is, you know, kind of highfalutin and idealistic from a martial arts standpoint, who stands, you know, firmly in the dough, in the way of martial arts, is like, you know, you don't want to hurt anybody, and a gun will hurt somebody. So, you know, maybe that's part of the hesitancy to train with guns.
Take martial arts so they don't have to kill somebody?
Well, it's not much as like, well, because, you know, we practice, you know, don't hurt somebody, you know.
Yeah, you don't hurt your partner.
You don't. Well, yeah, but and so I guess maybe, this is me playing devil's advocate, is the part where like, well, but with the gun, do you teach pistol whipping in your course?
The reality-based course, yes. The NRA courses, no.
Right. Okay, see, so, I mean, so then that's, you know, like, because that would be like the continuum was like, okay, we can hit them with the gun. You could throw the magazine at them, you know, or you can shoot them.
In the reality-based course, we teach pistol whipping if the weapon malfunctions. It's squeeze first. Oh, it's not working, or I'm out of ammunition, or I picked it up and it malfunctioned. I've got this big hunk of metal. Well, hit them with it.
Damn right. Now it's a fist load weapon.
Exactly. It's a force multiplier. It's like an oddly shaped Kubaton at that point. But yeah. that is not something that's taught in the NRA course.
Right. So maybe that's, I guess, and again, I'm trying to psychoanalyze the generic martial art, whatever it is the fact that, you know, they can't, when you're using the gun, you know, you're going to shoot them. You know, there's no, other than the threat factor of having the gun and I'm going to shoot you, if you actually do shoot them, you know, that kind of goes counter to the, well, you know, don't hurt anybody, you know, which from a self-defense standpoint, it doesn't make sense. But from an art standpoint, or, you know, a peace, love, dope, let's hug a tree standpoint, yes, that might work. And so that might be part of it because, you know, there's a lot of schools that, you know, they teach kids. And so imagine what would happen, you know, and in the back of their mind, someone who does this, you know, for a living, you know, teaches a kid to use a gun or defend themselves with a gun or whatever, and then the kid shoots somebody, and they're just worried about being sued. And so probably from a, you know, a purely business standpoint, that might be a factor, you know, of them. Because again, and again, that affects their bottom line, you know, as for a commercial school owner.
Yeah, but you don't have too much in the way of children in your classes, do you? I think you're primarily adults.
Yeah, yeah. 13 is the youngest I have, and that's just one of them.
In our studio, we do not teach weapons forms to the children. We don't do that. We only cover that in the adult class. Now, there are some teenagers that have been invited up to the adult class because of experience or size and things like that. But we really have a line at weapons usage based on maturity.
Yeah. There you go.
But I don't know if that's true or not, because, I mean, you see these four-year-olds using weapons in tournaments in the weapons forms and the competition and the free forms and everything else. You can see these kids doing jumping, spinning back kicks and, you know, wielding commas and sai and stabs.
But I can almost guarantee that those people are not learning. Like we teach, when we introduce the bow, the staff is the, and not a bow staff, people.
You can't shoot somebody with a bow staff?
No, nor can you cut them with a katana sword. it drives me nuts. Anyway, when we teach the bow, the first thing we teach them are the basic techniques, just, you know, strike, block, you know, and how to move it around their body. So, and then once they do that, you know, then they might learn the kata, but probably before that, I have them, you know, someone's swinging at them and they're blocking it, and they're swinging at somebody and they're blocking it. So there's an actual functional level of it. And actually, I've got two new students. Well, not new students. My two junior students. They've just started them on the bow, and they're two brothers, and they, like, you know, smacking each other with a stick. Well, one of them hit the other guy's hand, and it's like, ow! I'm like, exactly. You can't horse around with a weapon. You're going to hurt somebody, and see, that hurts. But then the caveat is like, but if someone comes at you with a stick and you're defending yourself, that's what you want to do, is hit them in the hand. But I, you know, those guys, the kids that are learning, you know, the XML and or XMA or whatever it is.
We're not talking coding here. We're talking martial arts.
Yeah. The kids that are learning all these crazy forms where they're jumping around, they're not using it. I can almost guarantee they're not learning it from a functional standpoint. They're learning it from a performance standpoint.
Certainly, but again, we come in with the misinformation is that they may think they know it.
Absolutely. And there's the rub there. And I think that is a disservice, you know, and I'm sure it's probably, they're going like, well, you know, and then when they get older, they'll want to learn about it seriously. Well, no, they're not, you know, they're probably going to drop out if statistics have borne it out, and they're going to be walking around with, you know, nunchucks and think they're Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
And so then maybe, you know, to bring it kind of back more to the topic is that then maybe the instructors who are teaching this do know. It's like, well, if, you know, they did a gun kata and they were walking around with a gun, they would not know how to use it from a functional standpoint and hurt themselves or others. Probably themselves.
Well, yeah, themselves at least, if not other people as well.
Yeah. There's probably a lot of levels on why you don't see, you know, handguns push more in the martial arts and traditional arts. I'm sure in more eclectic arts and reality based arts, you know, it's a function of it. But I don't think, unless you're doing a seminar and it's going to be a regular seminar and there's going to be regular training on it, that most martial arts schools would do it. I mean, that one of the many things preventing me from doing it is I don't have the time to train myself up, much less my students. So one of the things that, again, I would say, well, go find yourself a weapons instructor, you know, and no skin off my nose. The difference between the cultures is probably far more nuanced, I think, than would be obvious. I think that, you know, the gun culture, if you will, is of serious gun practitioners or weapons practitioners, call it what you will.
The gun people who are interested in real defense, not sport shooting, not hunting, not Because it's interesting, the gun community is segmented as well. You know, the hunters don't necessarily like the self-defense people.
Yeah.
Or the collectors, or the sportsmen. Well, I guess the hunters are considered sportsmen. But, I mean, as far as just sport shooting versus sport hunting, there are lots of, like, many different styles of martial arts. There's many different styles and interests when it comes to firearms.
Yeah.
But the people interested in the self-defense are far more accepting of the other types of self-defense, I think, than the martial artists are kind of ingrained in their tradition, the do, the way, and they're not as accepting of firearms into that arena. And this is one of the big challenges with reality-based and modern martial arts self-defense versus the purely traditional martial arts self-defense.
Well, yeah, and I think that probably goes... I think you make a really valid point, because you could also say that with reality based. You could say that with mixed martial arts. You could say that with, you know, in a lesser extent or whatever, an eclectic style, like, you know, quote unquote American karate, or, you know, is a traditional style is probably, you know, a little more looking down the nose of it as from the sense of, they're like, well, you know, they don't teach it our way, you know, kind of thing. So they're missing something. Whereas, you know, some people don't want all that part. So from a cultural standpoint, you know, like mixed martial art guys, I know a lot of mixed martial art guys that, you know, are just like, oh, traditional martial arts are crap because they don't teach you blah. But I also know some mixed martial art guys that, you know, have a foundation in traditional martial arts, and they have black belts and blah, blah, blah. And then it's kind of like, okay, but they approach it from a different angle. They're going, you know, they're doing it for competition or whatever. And, you know, like reality-based martial art self-defense type people are, you know, a lot of them have a basis in a traditional art, but they, you know, there's something that draws them more towards that aspect of it, and I think that kind of gets a lot of traditional, you know, mainstream, whatever you want to call it, martial artists gets their goat a little bit, because they're like, well, you know, well, we have that. Well, yeah, but you don't have, you know, a focus on that. And so I think that, you know, probably self-defense gun practitioners are more open to martial arts because they're already looking at it from a self-defense angle. They're, you know, they're going, okay, well, here's the entire scope of things that you can use to defend yourself. Whereas probably in a traditional art, you know, they're like, well, here's the scope of things you have to defend yourself, you know, because in Okinawa, they didn't have guns. And so, you know, their sphere is, you know, less encompassing than, say, someone who's coming from just a purely self-defense standpoint. And so an instructor like myself, I think I'm a little more broad-minded on the fact of, you know, you have to consider the option of a gun because they're there and you can't, you know, wish them away. The caveat to that is like, I'm sure you've probably seen it. My little tagline for my school are practical martial arts for the everyday world, because I've had some debates with people who have poo-pooed martial arts or traditional martial arts, even though they had a martial arts background, and we're talking about guns and blah, blah, blah. And you know, they'd say, well, you know, I ran a liquor store and I would get robbed like every week. And I'm like, well, why did you own a liquor store? You know, why did you live in that part of town? You know, I've never had a gun pulled on me. But that doesn't mean I discount the fact that it could happen. And if you do that, again, the disservice, you know. And so, but probably the gun practitioners are operating in their sphere of, you know, well, I carry a gun, so probably someone else is carrying a gun. You know, so they're more inclusive of like, okay, and, you know, people such as yourself are, you know, have a martial arts background and go like, okay, well, maybe I can't get to my gun. Maybe I can't clear it. Maybe they're within 21 feet, whatever it is. So you have to include that aspect, the hand-to-hand aspect, or, you know, the up-close and personal aspect. Whereas, because, I mean, you know, it's the modern life and whatever. So I think traditional martial artists probably are more, you know, they want to harken back to the, you know, the perfect world of, you know, challenges at midnight and everyone dressing in black and fighting. And that my contention is neither one of those is going to happen. You know, I'm hoping to get the rest of my life with no one pulling a gun on me. but I can't discount the fact that's going to happen. But I'm almost 100% sure that I'm never going to be challenged to fight anybody at midnight with swords. it's kind of that sort of, you know, where you just got to put yourself in that world. You know, we as martial artists have to understand the fact that there are people who carry guns, there are people who carry knives, and you cannot say, I'm going to ignore that, because it's to the detriment of yourself and your students and your family, everyone around you. So the psychology of it is, I think that you know, self-defense based, especially gun practitioners, are probably more open to the hand-to-hand part because it's self-defense. And probably traditional martial artists have to decide if they're caring more about self-defense or just the art. You know?
Exactly. But also, I mean, but more to the point is that the traditional martial arts people need to consider adding the modern weaponry to their personal defense arsenal.
Well,
because they, again, they think, well, my hands are enough. And in some cases, they are, and they're appropriate. In other cases, they're insufficient. And I think that's part of the disconnect between the traditional martial arts and the firearms community, is that the traditional martial arts don't see the necessity for anything beyond empty hand.
But I can't say that I agree that is the pervasive attitude. I'm thinking that it's probably more, like I say, like from a business standpoint, the cost of doing it. Because what do you...
Well, but you're talking about from an instructor perspective, and I'm talking about from the individual.
Well, right. Well, but
the individuals have been brainwashed by some of these traditional martial arts instructors because they don't have that experience and they're not comfortable with it. They then teach their students that it's not necessary.
But we can't... And I guess my argument is I can't say that that's what it is. I can say that might be a reason for it. Like, and as I say, like in my world, if my students were to come to me and say, you know, ooh, we need to train with guns, I'm going to say, well, go to a gun instructor, because I can't give you the full, you know, breadth of knowledge to, you know, defend yourself with a gun. I can put you in the ballpark, and I can show you some things to defend yourself if someone has a gun and they're pretty close to you. So I guess, and you know, on my side is, my argument is like, you need to acknowledge they're there. You have to say, okay, here's the, it's, you know, the same reason why, you know, someone might say, okay, go train jujitsu or judo if you want to improve your ground game. Because like, I don't teach judo or jujitsu, and I don't really teach ground fighting per se, but I teach ground techniques. I teach grappling techniques. But if you want to be really good at that, you need to go to this guy. But, you know, where do you break down the percentage of training? You know, so, if I were to say, like, I'm going to add a handgun component to my curriculum, then I'd have to figure out some way to put it in. I mean, where do you put it in at? You know, how often do you train with it? How often do you, know?
The traditional curriculum doesn't have an open auxiliary slot for insert firearm instruction here.
Right. You know, and so, you know, and it doesn't, like, I mean, and same thing with us is like, we teach karate, but we teach kabuto. So, well, how do you got to shoehorn the weapon part in there? Well, luckily for us, a lot of the concepts from the empty hand applies to the weapon, you know? So, you know, you can kind of dribble at there. Yeah. You know, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if you know, so then you're like, okay, well then am I going to do, you know, 50% empty hand, you know, 20%, you know, or 25%, you know, traditional weapons, and then 25%, you know, modern weapons, let's say, you know, and then if it's modern weapons, well then, you know, do you include the knife in that and the handgun? You know, and so then, well then you just split that 25% down more. Whereas probably from a personal standpoint, a serious martial artist needs to go like, okay, well, if I'm going to use a gun, I need to train with it. So I need to go get responsible training. And that's where I would be. It was like, you know, but as a martial arts instructor and as a martial artist, I would never want to hear anybody go like, don't worry about a gun. And I've never really heard anybody say that.
Yeah, I've never heard anybody say that either.
But I can see where, you know, there are people like, well, you know, if someone pulls a gun on you, you just do this.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. But they make it sound that like it's that easy. Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. If somebody pulls a gun, well, you just do this technique and you'll be fine.
Yeah. And then the caveat to that is, okay, well, then you have to train the hell out of that technique to make sure it works. And just like you were talking about, like it worked maybe 50% of the time. Yeah. And, you know, as a martial artist, you can't go like, well, it's only over 50% of the time. You know, so I'll train, you know, I'll make it 25% of the curriculum or whatever. It's got to be much more of a, I don't know how to say it, a much more of an inclusive sort of like, okay, and, you know, I guess maybe kind of like I do, I guess, is, you know, well, this is a gun and this is how it works and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But if you want to know more, you're going to have to go study, which is really the way all martial arts should be, is, well, if you want to know more about this, you need to study. And I tell my students all the time, you know, so I can't teach you how to defend yourself. I can show you, you know, techniques to learn, but you have to train. If you don't train, when you walk out that door, I can't help you anymore. You know, and it kind of goes the same thing with a gun. It's like, you know, if you don't train with a gun, when you go to pull it, you're only going to be really as good as your training. So probably, I guess, to go with the topic is I probably, people from the gun standpoint are probably more likely to train, you know, with their weapon and train in the martial arts because they understand the value of the training probably more than a traditional martial artist or a lot of martial arts people because it's, you know, quite frankly, they probably just don't want to do that much work.
Yeah, which is why we have the prevalence of belt factories.
Exactly. You know, did you check clear? Okay, great. You know, somebody was just talking to me the other day about training and about not training that long on something or and I said, you know, a long time ago, you know, in Okinawa, you learned one or two kata and that was it, you know, and you trained the poop out of them. You know, you train for one for 10 years and you learn the next one. Whereas, you know, and I'm quite probably sure in the gun world, you know, you train, you know, with that weapon until you understand that weapon thoroughly. And then you might add another, you know, okay, now I'll train with a rifle for a little while or, you know, it's probably more so in the martial arts. It's just, you know, that's one more thing that you have to train on that's going to take away from this other stuff. And you don't really want to be doing all that anyway.
So to take that to heart, when I go to the range, 9 times out of 10 or 8 times out of 10, I take my defensive handgun, the one that stays at my bedside, the one that I am licensed to carry, because that is the one that my life is going to depend on. So I want to train with that one. I want to know it inside and out. So that is, you know, unless I'm going out for fun and just blasting or to try a new one, that is my choice.
Yeah. And from a martial arts standpoint, you know, I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. Because, I mean, I train. One of the reasons why I think they put the bow as like the first weapon you learn, and the reason that I really like it a lot is because I can usually find a stick or something like a stick.
Okay. Well, and that's for the non martial artists out there, describe the bow.
It's a 6-foot staff, essentially, or we also train with a 4-foot staff, or the, you know, a Eskrima stick, the 2-foot staff, basically just anything that's a stick. Then, I mean, there's, you know, broom handles and mop handles and any number of things. And so I kind of think that in my mind is like a stick is one of the more prevalent items around you. I mean, looking around, weapons of opportunity, which I'm a big fan of weapons of opportunity. And so that's one I more seriously focus on training with a bow than I do with a sai or the kama or the tampa or anything else, because to me is like that's the more practical of the weapons that are going to be near me at any given time. And so I want to know how it works. And I tell my students to just, you know, move it around your body, move it around, you know, move your hands all up and down it, see where it's going to go. Learn that weapon. You know, and that's one of the things that, you know, is probably the, you know, same theme, is you have to take the time to really learn that weapon. And I'm sure there's probably, you know, one of our instructors up in Seattle, he does personal protection and he's a reserve federal officer. So he goes to the range a couple times a week, if not more. And he trains seriously with his weapon. He doesn't, you know, he trains just as hard at the shooting range, you know, as he does in the dojo, because he may have to use either one of those. And so I think that, you know, but he has to make a conscious effort to do it. He really has to. He teaches because he teaches law enforcement classes. He teaches it from a, you know, weapons retention and blah, blah, blah. And then, okay, now you can get your gun out, you know, that kind of thing. But he doesn't, you know, he doesn't shirk one for the other. He treats them both kind of equally because he lives in that world where he has to use them both.
But he's a professional. That's what he does for his living. The rest of us are just amateurs.
Actually, he's an IT guy just like me. He does that on the side as his job, but that's the way he comes at it. He's used to be an Army officer. That's his mindset. And so probably, and thinking about that by you saying he's a professional, that is probably speaks more to, I think probably speaks more towards the mindset of this is when you train with a gun from a self-defense standpoint, you are thinking it much more of, muzzle discipline, what I'm doing is life or death. By pointing this gun, it's life or death at my target. So that probably lends much more of a mindset of, I better be right with this so I don't hurt, someone nearby, so I don't, no collateral damage, whatever. Probably just, I understand that by doing this, there's much more of a chance of death or serious injury. Whereas from a martial arts standpoint, they probably, for probably to the detriment, probably not as considerate of that because, no one really, people don't really hit each other. They're wearing pads, exclusive of our mixed martial art brethren and sistren. So they're probably taking it a little less lightheartedly.
Yeah. As someone, there are no range safety officers watching your every move and watching the line when you practice. You have just the instructor.
Right. You broke somebody's nose. You hit them a little too hard. There's no sense of whatever I'm doing can really mess somebody up, I think. Maybe. So that may be also the reason why that there's a little more of a consideration of, it's like, we don't need guns because, we're not going to hurt somebody. We're going to do this. We're not going to, we're not going to hurt somebody doing our thing. So, we don't need that kind of attitude, which I think is wrong, but which is probably... maybe what you're speaking to is when I was doing dive classes, I was a dive master for a friend of mine who was an instructor, and I jokingly in front of him one day said something about, he'd accidentally, we had, a whole bunch of people, and I think he just set up the regulator incorrectly or something, and I caught it and changed it, and they were saying something about it, and I joked about it in front of the students, and we finished our little class and went on. He was like, "Hey, help me carry the tanks to the car." And I stayed in the car, and he's like, "Don't ever do that again." And I was like, "What?" He told me, he said, "You made that little joke about it." He said, "We're only, 20 feet under the water, but, people could die." He said, "And I'm the only confidence they have. They're trusting in me to have the confidence to make sure that they can get through this dive class." So I was like, he's right. He's absolutely right. So maybe that is kind of leads to what you're talking about the arrogance of a martial art instructor going like, they need to have the confidence in me that I'm teaching them, that I know what I'm talking about. And so when, when someone says, "Oh, gun," go like, "You don't need a gun. Don't worry about a gun." Because they, it's misguided.
Totally misguided. And it's dangerous because it instills a false sense of confidence.
And
that'll get you killed. That'll get you pummeled.
That'll get you killed. And then probably, and someone will get sued at some point because this is America. And it's probably misguided from the fact that you're like, I need to let them know that I have the confidence. And maybe they do have the confidence that they can do it, but I can almost guarantee they're wrong.
But you can instill confidence without misinforming.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. I think it's probably easier to, be a blowhard and just kind of bluff your way through it than to actually have to deal with it because, maybe, again, I think it's probably more from a business standpoint of them going like, well, if they don't think I'm a good instructor, or you know, they don't think they're going to learn, you know, the death touch, then I'm going to lose them. And then, you know, then I'm not going to make as much money next month. I kind of think it's probably, it's, I think you're probably right. I think it's ego coupled with, you know, I don't know, self-preservation, I guess.
At least economic self-preservation.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, Darwinism may come into play, and then we'll know who's right.
All right, cool. Well, Paul, I really appreciate all the time, and I hope the listeners enjoyed the conversation.
Me too. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, we touched on some sensitive topics and probably stepped on a few toes, but that generally makes for a good show.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that probably the majority of your listeners, I don't think they're that sensitive. I mean, they're listening to your podcast for the same reason why I listen to it is, you know, quality information about self-defense. So if nothing else, it'll make for some lively debate in your email box.
Yeah, cool. Well, and I appreciate the compliment.
And that's sincere.
Cool. Well, thanks, Paul. And again, you can find Paul on Karate Cafe. They post occasionally.
And we're trying to get better. We've we're actually going to try a live show here before too much longer, to let people call in and ask questions. And we're actually we're going to revamp the website. We're doing some stuff. I've had a few things going on in my life that has kind of precluded it, but we are really we intend this year to light the fires again.
Good, because you guys have a great show, and it used to be so nice and regular, and then it's like, you know, 4 or 5 shows in a row is like, woohoo, they're back. And then they disappear for 6 months.
The vicissitudes of life, my friend.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks again, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back. And thanks again, Paul, for joining us this week. We always love having you on the show. Now, after our discussion, Paul found an outstanding video that just went live. It's an interview with Dennis Tooler, the creator of the Tooler Drill. It's about 14 minutes long, and it's an interesting look into how the drill was developed directly from the man who made it happen. You can find a link to the video in the show notes. Also, I want to emphasize that I love traditional martial arts. I consider myself a traditional martial artist, and I will probably do so until the day I die. What I don't do, though, is let my affection for the arts blind me to safety issues and holes that they have. If you hear any frustration in my voice, it's directed at those who practice the arts and teach them poorly, not at the arts themselves. Nothing is perfect, and just because you love something doesn't make it perfect. Following anything blindly is dangerous, so you always need to keep your eyes open and maintain your awareness. And finally, don't forget that we have a 20% discount on subscriptions to Taekwondo Times magazine. Just enter our exclusive promo code of PRACDEF01, that's PRACDEF01, at checkout. The subscription to the print edition also includes digital copies. You can find a promo and a link in the show notes. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddicts.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Tom Gilmore lives on a farm. There's a storm on the way, so he's boarding up the windows of his house.
Haley Williams lives in an apartment. It's a beautiful day. She's making her usual monthly donation to the American Red Cross.
Tom doesn't know a tornado will leave his family with no place to go.
Haley doesn't know her gift will help give Tom's family shelter.
When you support the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddicts.com. That's podcast at alexhaddox.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddox.com.